So we can, for years we've been saying we're going to someday have these cars, and now we're getting them. And it's an extraordinary moment. So we're here to celebrate that. And we're here to celebrate all those cars, these dozens of cars here. Last year, we had, we had a few converted cars, and we had a few leftover cars, the Valiant RAV4 EVs, and the Ranger S10s. We had the cars that were managed to stay alive all these years. Now we've actually got production plug-in hybrid vehicles. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, let's say that's really an extraordinary thing. And for all the grief we've given the car makers, they've stepped up and they've made the cars. Isn't that right? Yeah, let's do it. Okay. Yep. Okay. Looks like we're getting a little critical mass here. So I'm ready to start. Now, there's a really tiny screen here. But don't worry. If you go to the calcars.org website, you can see the whole thing. And there's a lot of information in that on that screen, but you don't have to write any of it down because it's all on the website. So what I want to do now is I want to tell a story. It's a story called How I Spent My Last 10 Years. And it's the best years of my life, by far. I can't tell you how satisfied I am about what I've been doing and what's happened. It's an amazing time. So I want to tell that story. I want to explain a little bit about plug-in cars for you people who don't know. Either I assume here everybody here knows what a plug-in car is, but how to explain it to other people. That's an important thing, because everybody here is an evangelist for these cars. I want to talk about the choices we have now and the ones that are coming. I want to talk about how you can act now and who you can do it with, the organizations you can do it with. And I want to give you information so that you can answer your questions and everybody else's questions. And then finally, I want to talk about CalCars' next projects, what we're trying to do in the future after declaring victory on this first phase of the project. So in that little tiny screen there, you can see those are my Chevy Volt and my Nissan Leaf parked in front of my house in Redwood City. We've been driving them since December on the Volt, since January on the Leaf. And sometime at the end of this year, we're moving the whole kit and caboodle over to Berkeley, relocating. And what I did was, and this is an important message, I basically said, we have to drive everywhere. We want to have two good cars to drive everywhere, but we don't want to have to drive everywhere. We want to be able to walk places. We want to be able to take mass transit, bike, run, bus, whatever it is. You probably heard about the idea of a negawatt. The cheapest unit of electricity is a negawatt, a watt saved. Same thing applies to a negamile. You know, I love plug-in cars, but a mile not driven is way better than any plug-in car. So I did a compass around every BART station, and we're going to live five blocks from a BART station, and I hope we'll go down to one car. And, you know, conceivably, someday, down to no cars and just use a zip car and other kinds of things. And, you know, for everyone living in the Bay Area, I'm a big advocate of plug-in hybrids, but I'm also a huge advocate of plug-in all-electric vehicles. You should know that every family that has that has two vehicles, that second vehicle is absolutely no-brainer to have it an all-electric vehicle. And if you want to have a little courage, your single vehicle can be an all-electric vehicle. I know dozens of people for whom that's true. So what do? Most of their driving is just around the neighborhood or around 50 miles, whatever. It's all electric. They want to go further. They've got three choices. They've got Zipcar, which is everywhere. They've got Enterprise and Hertz and the other places that you can rent a car. Or they just say to their neighbor, hey, I'm going up to Tahoe for the weekend. Would you mind driving my snazzy all-electric vehicle for the weekend and give me your gas guzzler? And people will jump at the chance. They'll say, please, can I be the first one next time you're going away to switch cars with you? So you don't have to own a gas guzzler anymore. And that's an amazing thing. That's an amazing accomplishment. So here we go. We talk about plug-in cars, and it's kind of complicated message, but we boiled it down to a meme, a catchy phrase that basically puts it all into three words. Compared to gasoline, electricity is cheaper, cleaner, and domestic. And that's all it is. Cheaper, your mile is 2 to 4 cents a mile compared to 8 to 50 cents a mile. Obviously, it depends on your price of oil, price of electricity. That economics on cheaper also carries into the economics of the auto industry, because everybody in the auto industry now says the future of this industry is electrification. So plug-in vehicles, batteries, all the part of the supply chain, that's the way this auto industry is going to move forward. So that's cheaper. Cleaner. Cars have gotten pretty clean in terms of conventional emissions, but obviously the main issue is CO2, greenhouse gases. On the national grid, which is half coal, an electric mile is half as much CO2 as a gasoline mile. And it gets only better than that. California, we're 20% coal, so you can see how much better. My favorite thing people say about plug-in cars is they're the only vehicles that get cleaner as they get older, because the grid is getting cleaner. And for me, my entire motivation on this thing has been about climate change and energy security. Nothing else really counts anyway, and I believe we're in a real dire situation. You know, we are in huge danger. I'll show you. I have a couple T-shirts. I'll show you one of them. This I first saw on Mark Geller, who was I think I saw him a minute ago. This is a T-shirt called Petrocide. This is what we're doing to ourselves, and you know we can't keep doing it. And if you think about climate change, it's real easy to fix climate change. We need to fix our construction industry and our buildings, and we can retrofit them. Easy, conceptually, right? We need to fix agriculture. There are ways to make zero carbon agriculture. And we need to fix anything that moves, every device, mostly transportation, but not only. And we can take every single device in the world and power it electrically. And if at the same time we clean the grid, we're done. Now that's something we could do. You know, we can do it with the transmission lines and the wind power and the solar power and so forth. And if we clean if we plug in everything in the world, we're done. And that's what the message of plug-in cars really is fundamentally.
Thank you.
Yeah, even louder, because maybe some more people will come over. Yeah, we can do this. So how do we explain plug-in cars? We talk about how it's like you a plug-in hybrid to start with. A hybrid just uses some electricity. When you go up a hill, you use gasoline. On the way back down, you recapture that into a battery and you use it to start up again. That's a hybrid. You can double your miles per gallon from 25 to 50. But it's all gasoline. You can't get away from that. So if you add a larger battery and you can plug it in, now you've got two alternative sources of propulsion. And so conceptually, the way we struggled with this a lot for a long time. It's like your car has two fuel tanks, and you use the electric one first. That's all. And there's variants on it. There's technical designs for the series hybrid, the parallel hybrid, the Chevy Volt, other vehicles. But they all work that way in one way or another. And what's an electric vehicle? It's that plug-in hybrid minus all the gasoline stuff, the tank, everything else. And when you're left with just an electric vehicle, you're there. And if you want to go for a service on an electric vehicle, you go in every 7,500 miles and you rotate the tires and you're done. So that's the idea. And last year, you know, we could talk theoretically about these cars. We could say, you know, these cars are coming someday, but now they're all here and you can see those plug-in hybrids and you can see those all-electric vehicles right now. Here they are. So there's a lot of really cool pictures from the last 10 years. I'm going to describe them. On the upper left, you've got when CalCars, we're a nonprofit organization. We uniquely combine technology demonstrations and advocacy to get this message across. So we founded in 2002. In 2004, we did the first Prius conversion across the bay here in Marin in Ron Grembin's garage. He spoke here last year. That's him on the left of that group. We took a Prius and we fixed it. And now, 7 years later, Toyota finally is coming around with a car that's better than what we built. Obviously, we did it in a garage. You know, it's not too hard to do better than that, but they did a lot better. And you can see Mark Geller in that picture too. He was one of the stalwarts. Next to it, when I got my Prius, a white Prius that you may have seen driving around the Bay Area a lot with green signs, 100 plus miles per gallon on it, one of the first things we did was we flew that car to Washington. And it was joined by another car that we were involved in converting that came down from Connecticut. And we parked it in front of Congress, and we brought congressmen, representatives, senators out to see it and to talk about it. And they went back in and they said, why can't we have these cars? We saw some engineers out there who did these things. And one of our most powerful messages was every alternative fuel vehicle needs some other new technology, new infrastructure. This connects us to today's infrastructure. This was the little dongle, that's engineering talk in Silicon Valley, for connecting a vehicle, for any device. And so we took these, and the members of Congress passed them around, and they like talked into it like it was a sacred object or a microphone. And so we handed these things out. And I've got them here for Eric and for Brad, who've done such a great job in putting this thing together. I've got some of these souvenirs. So we had those then. Now you've got the new version of that thing. It's got a long name, EVSE, Electric Vehicle Supply Equipment. It's not a charger because the charger's in the car. Here's the volt, here's the leaf. This one here reflects the energy of some of the people in the electric vehicle community. It's done by a company that's got a booth in the back called EVSE Upgrade. And what they've done is they took the standard EVSE that Nissan gives with the vehicle, and they fixed that. They made it so it can work on 240 volts, and so it can bring more power to you. So you can plug this thing into a dryer outlet, or you can just do it into 120. And you can buy them right back there. It's amazing. When we did our conversions, we made these t-shirts. They say, I get 100 plus miles per gallon. And we wore them, Calcar's logo. And we started selling t-shirts that said, I want 100 plus miles per gallon. And so now a lot of people can actually get 100 plus miles per gallon. So we brought the cars to Washington. We also brought them to Crissy Field, right near the Golden Gate Bridge. And we joined an organization called Step It Up, which was the predecessor of 350.org, which was the predecessor or the sponsor of the tar sands action you read about last couple weeks. And everybody got the message that plug-in cars are essential to this movement for doing something about climate change. And next week, on the 24th, you've got the Moving Planet event. And it's another event about climate change and what we can do about it. There are feeder events coming from all over the Bay Area, but there's going to be a parade down in San Francisco. There's going to be at least 10 plug-in vehicles that are part of that parade, and it will be there. My Nissan Leaf has a conversation starter license plate. It's coal bad. And I get a lot of comments from that. I wouldn't take that car to Kentucky or West Virginia, but around here, people want to understand why driving a car on the grid is a good idea. Coal is bad, but coal in cars is a lot better than gasoline in cars. So that's that message. The other pictures there, we got President Bush to look at a high motion conversion in 2007. Even before candidate Obama came to Google and looked at one of their conversions in 07. The two Google guys got really involved in this whole thing. In 2008, one of my favorite moments was when the chief engineer of the recently announced Chevy Volt came to Pat's garage in California. Pat and Nick talked here before, and met with a group of about 15 electric vehicle and plug-in hybrid drivers to get our information, our ideas about what ought to be in the car. And that was just a great moment. And there on the lower right was my car after I got it, driving in the Bay Area. So there's a lot of images. Those are books. So one day, Congressman Jay Inslee was on the phone calling me. I work at home. He called in and he said, hi, I'm Jay Inslee. I'd heard of him. You probably all have too. He's now running for governor in the state of Washington, one of the best people in Congress. He said, I'm writing a book about plug-in hybrids. I'd like to tell your story. And so he did. And about 20 or 30 other books came out over that time. One of them, the first one on the left there, is called Plug-in Hybrids, the Cars That Will Recharge America, written by Sherry Boschert, who's a longtime plug-in person in the Bay Area. That book is on sale at the back in the Plug-in America booth. That tells the story of the early story of these vehicles. So we just got a tremendous amount of validation from all these people writing in these books. And then we had a media onslaught. We had more media than you can imagine, and I'll just read two of them. One of them, my favorite, possibly the most sought after technological innovation since Captain Kirk first flipped open his communicator, is the plug-in hybrid. And that was from a major reporter at the New York Times. And there are a lot of other kudos like that. And then the first one on this page is from America's leading climate scientist, James Hansen. And he was arrested at the tar sands action of place. He said if that project goes through, it's curtain. You know, we will get all that oil traveling through to the South Coast and exported all over the world, all that dirty oil, really dirty oil. He said the plug-in hybrid approach, as being pursued by CalCars, seems to be our best bet for controlling vehicle CO2 emissions in the near term. And he really understood it. And I agree with that. I also believe that plug-in hybrids are a transitional platform, and the sooner we get to all electric vehicles, the better. If I turn out to be wrong that plug-in hybrids become the dominant vehicle, I win. We all win. So we had a lot of great time, and on our website, there's a lot of great quotes from that media avalanche. Another chock-full slide. We began chronicling what the auto industry was saying about plug-in cars, plug-in hybrids, since around 2005. And you can read all their quotes as they went back and forth and said contradictory things. And we had a lot of fun sending journalists to that place and basically catching them on the contradictions of what they said. And eventually, we basically started promulgating the idea that there was a race going on for what car maker was going to be first and which car maker was going to come to market first. And a lot of car makers jumped into that race. And at this point, every car maker has something coming, either a plug-in electric vehicle or a plug-in hybrid already on the market. If you want to track them, there's trackers at pluginamerica.org, and there's a tracker at plugincars.com, which is the Brad Berman site. And there's also at Wikipedia, there's one, and you won't remember this, but you can look on the slide. You have to search for modern production plug-in vehicles, and you'll get a rundown. Unfortunately, all three of these trackers are not up to date, and in some cases not fully accurate, especially on price and on delivery schedules, because nobody's got the resources among those three places to fix them. And if any of you want some volunteer project, you want to scan the media and go and help Plug-in America or Plug-in Cars update them or contribute your own information to that Wikipedia site, that's something you can do right now. So that race is really in earnest. All those cars are coming. The story of this campaign, the first part of the story actually was really well told in Who Killed the Electric Car, which most of you probably have seen. The sequel, The Revenge of the Electric Car, is coming. It's going to open nationally on November 1st. If you want to see a preview of it, go to the Palo Alto Film Festival website, and you can go to a preview on October 1st, and you can see it a month before everybody else. Now, this is the headline of this slide says, Victory. How often do our dreams come true? So this is the story of what happened on December 22nd of last year when I and my technology partner, Ron Gremban from Corte Madera, and Andy Frank from Davis, he's the father of the modern plug-in hybrid, all came to Novato Chevrolet. Andy had picked up his Volt the day before up in Sacramento, but we got our Chevy Volts on December 22nd. And there's a great picture there on the upper left. That picture has on the left there Mark Geller from Plug-in America. Next to him is Dave Barthmas, who, if you saw Who Killed the Electric Car, was the person forced to talk on behalf of GM and say a lot of misrepresentations of all sorts. And he's a good guy. And he's really happy to drive his plug-in car. And he was there. And then you had Nick Rothman and Pat Kadam from Green Garage in the back there, and me and the three of us. And so this was the culmination of our dreams. And on the right there, you've got a picture. For a little while, I had a three-car fleet. I got the Leaf in January. We had the old converted Prius and the Volt and the Leaf, and we had to get rid of one of them. We sold it to a plug-in advocate in San Francisco. So we now have those two cars. So it's been now 9 months since the three of us have had those cars. There's a better picture of us on my Volt in the back there, a big one. You can see it, some of this information. So here's how we've done in 9 months. For years, we said 100 plus miles per gallon vehicles, and that's got an asterisk. It's 100 miles per gallon of gasoline plus electricity, about 2 cents a mile. But people said, these cars, these plug-in hybrids, aren't going to get 100 plus miles per gallon. It obviously depends on how you drive. So for Ron, he's driven 4,729 miles in the last 9 months and gotten 151 miles per gallon. It's right on his display. There's no question about it, mostly in the Bay Area. Andy Frank has driven 8,900 miles between Dixon, where his new company, Efficient Drivetrains, Inc., is, and Davis in Sacramento. In his 8,900 miles, he's 107 miles a gallon. That's pretty good. For me, I'm ashamed. Okay, I've driven 4,300 miles locally on the Leaf because my wife and I will drive the Leaf first every day because it's all electric. It's got that great range. So we just drive that all the time unless we need five passengers rather than four or we're going a longer distance. But I've also taken that car to Tahoe 10 times since December, round trip to Tahoe, and about dozens of trips beyond the 80 so miles, say easy miles on the Leaf, over to Berkeley or other places, back and forth. So I've got 11,269 miles, and my miles per gallon is 62 miles a gallon, a lot lower. But that's because only about 3,000 or 4,000 of those miles have been electric. But when I get up to Tahoe, I drive all electric in Tahoe. And so, you know, it's a good system. And when we're in Berkeley, we'll have less local driving, so we're going to be better. And I just want to mention about those trips to Tahoe, the first time I actually figured it out. So that our Chevy Volt in the back there was the first vehicle to be able to drive from the Bay Area to Tahoe without recharging, without refueling, gasoline or electric. A Tesla has a 245-mile range, but you can't go 225 miles plus 8,000 feet up and get there. And there's no charging infrastructure yet along the way. So my Volt got there and made history that way. And so we had a full battery each way. And so on the way up, it was 35.8 miles per gallon. The first miles were electric and the rest was gasoline. On the way down, we coasted all the way to Colfax, basically. Well, I coasted and went on electric. So on the way down, 50.8 miles round trip. And you should know that the Chevy Volt, first car, the miles per gallon after the battery is depleted is only in the mid-30s, and it's not great. It's not compared to the Volt. But that's because they concentrated on getting that car to market at the right time when they said they would, and they threw in an Austrian engine that was not optimized. The next generation of Volt would be a lot better. So that's the story. And these cars, our experience is that they are wonderful cars. On usability, they could use a lot of help. And that's an issue. That's one of the things CalCars has talked about. They could use a lot of help on the displays and all sorts of things. So this lists the cars that are available now. I won't go through that right now, you know, what you can get. I mean, the Leaf, $35,000. The Smart EED, $600 a month. Mitsubishi I coming out, $29,000. The Roadster, Tesla Roadster. The successor, the S, next year will be around $60,000. Five passengers plus two kids. The Focus, the Ford Focus, Honda Fit, Toyota RAV4, Mini E-Coda, a lot of others coming next year. All eligible for $7,500 tax credit. And all eligible for the carpool lane. On plug-in hybrids, the Chevy Volt in the 40s. Not eligible for the carpool lane. Not eligible for a state tax credit, but eligible for the full $7,500 federal. The Fisker Karma is out and its successor, the Nina, expensive sports cars. The Prius, plug-in Prius, $32,000. It gets a $2,500 credit because that is a smaller battery, no state credit. So that's what's happening with all the cars. The next slide is the most important one, but you can't see it, so I'll tell you, you can look on the website. Success is not guaranteed. So we need to buy and plug two things, ideas and cars. So that's what we need to do. We need to educate ourselves. So here is a list of the organizations that are the key groups that are doing something. Plug in America, Electric Auto, chapters all over the Bay Area. ElectricDrive.org, that's the trade association of the industry. The Sierra Club has gone big into plug-in cars now. ProjectGetReady.org is the Rocky Mountain Institute, Amory Lovin's spinoff that's about readiness in communities, and all your local utilities. They can help too. That's the people you should be working with. And then you need to get informed and communicate with others. Again, there's about four or five main sites. There's EVWorld.com, PluginCars.com, sponsor here. Autoblog Green, Sebastian is here somewhere, great reporter. Green Car Congress, and AutoObserver.com from Edmonds. Those are all great sites where you can inform yourself. And then for users, there's GMVolt.com, where people who have the Volt post, and there's MyNissanLeaf.net, where people who have the Leaf post, and there'll be more. For the big picture, ClimateProgress.org, and Grist and TreeHugger situate plug-in vehicles in the larger picture on climate change. So I recommend you go to all those places. So that's pretty much it. I want to say that Plug-in Day nationally is October 16th on a Sunday, and there are going to be events around here, and check in at Plug-in America to find out what they are. CalCars has declared victory in 09 when we knew the cars were coming, but we were declared victory on phase one. There's a lot to do. The success of these vehicles is not assured. So if I have time, I'll talk for 5 or 10 minutes more about our new projects.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So we've got... What? Yeah. Okay, so we've got some... we've got a number of things we're trying to do. First is, if there's an entrepreneur around who wants to hit ground running with a new company, we want to help you start drivers to drivers to collect all the information about these cars and sell it to the auto industry in a way that's never been done before, in partnership with all the media outlets that are out there and all the other people. We think there's a business there, like the J.D. Power equivalent, grassroots and online. We're trying to get a four-wheel drive vehicle to come to America soon, because when I go to Tahoe, everybody says, I want a plug-in vehicle, but I won't buy one until it can plug in. So candidates are Mitsubishi and Subaru, a couple others, but nobody gets it. And we can offer them an instant market of hundreds of thousands of people. Anybody wants to work on that, they can talk to me. A local project, I've rewired the house we're building so that the car can be a backup system in the case of an outage. You don't spend $5,000 on a diesel backup system. And we've got rooftop solar, so we can keep going for days. And I'm trying to get the city of Berkeley to okay that. Well, no, we've got them to okay that. That's not a problem. But the other piece of it, I'm trying to get the city of Berkeley to okay our having the first free on-street charging facility for people who come to North Berkeley and want to shop for a couple hours on the right of way, not reserving a space, just saying if you're here and you can park, don't park here, park in the many open spaces on our block, but if you want to charge, you can charge here for free. I'm testifying in City Council in Berkeley Tuesday night. Anybody wants to join me or talk to me about it or send an email saying this is something we believe in, you know, you can contact me. Those are small projects. The biggest project is a bigger leap in concept. It's called the Big Fix. We need to get off oil, and in order to do so, the new plug-in cars aren't enough. A million cars by 2015 is great, a few million after that, but we've got 250 million cars in the U.S., a billion in the world. I used to say 900 million, a billion in the world. And so if we're going to actually have an impact on petroleum in the next 15 years, which is when we need it for climate change and energy security, we have to fix millions of vehicles that are already on the road. And we can do that. We can do it so that they're safe, warrantied, affordable, and we can do it in high volume. It's great that there are people who are converting cars like the Miata and others here, but this is a business. And so we're working to develop that, help companies that are trying to get started develop that business model. We have some good allies. That's a picture of me with Andy Frank and the head of a company from Chicago, along with Andy Grove, the former Intel chair at the 2008 plug-in conference, where we started talking about this idea. And he understands it. A lot of people understand it. In the movie, The Revenge of the Electric Car, you'll see Gadget, who's a Los Angeles converter. He's one of the four key figures in that film. So we need to convince people there's a business case to do this and a technology solution to do it. The technology solution is going to be EV in some cases, plug-in hybrid in others, depends on the construction of the vehicle. You start with the big gas guzzlers, you start with the ones where there's plenty of room for batteries, and you migrate down from there to the regular passenger vehicles. We think this is possible, but it's not going to happen automatically, and it needs to happen. So all the victories we have about plug-in cars are not going to make a difference unless this can happen. On our website, we have a bunch of companies that are getting started here. Here's one. A bunch of ex-Tesla people stayed in Michigan when they brought the development center back, called Alt-E, and they're going to convert Ford F-150s, the most popular vehicle in America. Basically, under $25,000, turn it into a vehicle with a 30-40-mile electric range, onboard power, which is really important for people in construction, for people going fishing or hunting, you name it. And they need some help. And they've applied for a federal loan, but they haven't gotten it. They're trying to get private sources of financing. Okay. Yep. Just two more slides. There's a lot of things that must happen. The most important is that $7,500 tax credit ought to be, conversions ought to be eligible for that, just like they are, not for a 10% credit up to $40,000 or up to $4,000. The way conversions are now, but there's a lot of this other stuff. And at some point, we need to get the oil industry to change what they're doing. And that's really hard, but they're going to stay around. They're not going anywhere. So we need to convert the oil industry to use hydrocarbons for plastics. That'll sequester the CO2. To drill now for geothermal. And to put their R&D in other places. So that's the idea. My question for you guys, this is the CalCos website. You can subscribe to our news. For me, I found the last 10 years was truly the best thing I've ever done with my life. If you have any time to spare, find something to do in clean tech, in the green world, in automotive world, and do it as a volunteer or full-time. Start as a volunteer, work your way into a job. This is clearly happening. All the venture capitalists, even with the news about Solyndra, all sorts of other people, understand that that this is the trillion-dollar opportunity. So this is the opportunity for everybody in this room. So I want to thank you for your attention. Bye.
Thank you, Peter. Anyway, I'll start off with a question that anyone will see what else looks at the table. As an entrepreneur and as an activist, you're using those kinds of models to try to spur innovation in the auto industry, correct?
Yes.
What role does legislation play? Is it policy maybe the most effective tool to affect some of these
changes? Well, of course legislation is the most important. And the $7,500 tax credit and the automotive industry loans or loan guarantees that are now starting to be criticized, they were all Bush programs. He was in support of that, and Obama was an even bigger supporter and made them happen. And the reason, one of the big reasons that happened was because there was this amazing coalition of people from every persuasion, every idea who came together and said, let's get plug-in cars. So I believe that legislation is critical. Without the $7,500 tax credit, we'd have a much more uphill battle without all the money for infrastructure and charging also. But the reason that happened is because of events like this, because of conversions and demonstrations. We shamed the auto industry into doing this. And when the auto industry started saying to the government, you know, we want your help to get these cars on the road, that's when it happened.
Oh, hi. I'm with my perfect family. I have a question. It's also about legislation. You mentioned the congressman.
The question is there any one overarching organization? I wish there were. Unfortunately, there isn't. Plug-in America does a great job, and they have a real good legislative focus. And I would say everybody here ought to, join Plug-in America and get on their mailing list. If you're a member of the Sierra Club, you can do it through them as well. The other organizations on my list, there is nobody doing it. It's decentralized, and that's a problem. And it means we don't have the clout with the auto industry, because I would say they built great cars, but they are still car makers, traditional car makers. So once they get the cars out there, I took my Volt in for a software update last week, and 9 months after that car came out, and after the media have been writing about it forever, they're still missing some really important things, such as if you don't want the radio on and you turn it off, the next time you touch the display screen, the radio comes back on, and you don't have a state of charge indicator. And there's all sorts of little things, and they didn't fix it in the software update. Why? They had 9 months to work on that. And there's all sorts of things. The new ones, the 2012 cars coming out, have a state of charge indicator on the display, but they didn't put it in software for us. And so we pleaded with them back last summer. We said, bring these cars to Silicon Valley before they're released, because they're mostly software. And get all the people, the experts around here in usability and interface and displays and everything to help you. And they didn't do it. So there's a lot of arrogance still in the auto industry. We know how to do it, and people will eat what we serve. But this group, working with the organizations, we can help you change that.
My question will be about resale value. You had your Prius, and many times you don't keep that in mind. But you and I haven't sold your Prius. Can you tell us a little bit about how resale values are the Priuses and the plug-in Prius, how we should look at
that? Okay, so the important thing to realize about the plug-in cars is that their batteries, which everybody says, oh, it's going to affect resale value. The batteries are warranted for 8 years and 100,000 miles to successive owners. So 8 years from now, that battery, which may cost $5,000 to $10,000 or more, originally, 8 years from now, that battery is going to cost a couple thousand dollars. Or if before you sell your car, you just go to Lush's garage or Pat's garage, whatever, and arrange with them to have you ship a great battery from a crashed car, and you put it right in that car, you will not have a problem, and you will have almost a new car at that point. So the resale values on these vehicles is going to hold up pretty well. Certainly the Prius has, and I sold my Prius, which had a high motion conversion in it, for a good price, and it's still driving real well. And it's the same thing with solar. When people talk about the payback of solar, they don't say, well, if you sell your house, are you going to get any value for that? That's not counted. So, the plug-in is discounted in the issue of resale values. And the other thing I would say is that these vehicles, like the Volt, it's using the engine a lot less. And so its service intervals are lower, and it's just like the Prius, you're not going to have to replace the brakes. There's lots of other things that are getting a lot less wear and tear, so the car will last longer.
What's your view on the pace of the rollout of electric cars and EV infrastructure?
Yeah. Well, my feeling on the EV infrastructure is that most people are going to be plugging in at home at night as the way they should, and the focus on infrastructure has been overstated. It's nice that it's out there and it's handy. It would be nice to have, fast charging to go on Route 80. We're going to have it on Route 5 all the way up and down pretty soon. But it's not a determining factor. The first buyers of these cars are self-selecting based on their driving patterns. So it's not a problem for anybody who has these cars. As far as the rate on the rollout, obviously, it was the tsunami had a real big, took a real big hit. On Toyota and Nissan, and slowed them a tremendous amount. So that means there's only 5,000 or a bit more Leafs out there. There's fewer than that on the Volt. The Volt closed its factory, and as a result, there were stories saying the Volt isn't selling anything. They closed its factory for a month, so it could triple capacity. So within the next year, they're going to be at the 5,000 to 10,000 vehicles a month rate. It's not as fast as advocates would like, but it's coming, and there are enough people out there getting cars so that they can tell their neighbors and people getting on the list. And you can sign up today, to get on the list for the Prius.
And even with aggressive forecasts for how many plug-in cars might get out on the road, it's still
might follow the same pattern as hybrids have in the past decades, right?
Yeah.
Something like at this point, 11 years into the hybrid market, we're still right about 2% of new car sales.
That's right. And we, right.
Is that discouraging?
It is discouraging because 2% after 10 years of new car sales, of all vehicles is what it is, right? Is it
2% of new car sales.
It's minuscule. It's a minuscule, so basically, yeah.
In California, but still quite small.
Yeah. If we have 250 million cars and we have 1 or 2 or 3 million hybrids, that's nowhere. And we did the projections. If you had a rate of adoption 10 times as fast as that with new cars, you'd still only have about 10 or 15% of the installed fleet after 10 or 15 years, which is why we have to convert cars. Cars stay on the road a lot longer than people think. And if we fix the cars that are 5 years old, 10 years old, we got a solution. And people think cars only last 5 or 6 years. That's the first owner. They go on for a decade or two. UPS trucks, 300,000 miles, 2 drivetrains during that time. So they stay around.
Two things. One on converting cars. It doesn't just have to be electric, because there's also conversion costs for natural gas. And when you convert a car to natural gas, that motor lasts twice as long as a gasoline motor. And it's pretty much no pollution.
Okay, so
it kind of goes to a cat. Yeah, the white pickup there is set for 0 emission cigarette because it basically does 0 emission.
So natural gas has this name called natural. So it's good, right? And clean. Clean vehicles, clean buses. And they are zero emissions, essentially zero emissions of conventional emissions, but they're still a fossil fuel. They're 20 or 30% lower CO2 than gasoline, which is nice. But if you read the recent studies, you'll see that when you take into account the whole cycle, including the emissions of methane, which is a 20 times greater greenhouse gas in the process of extracting and producing natural gas, it may be worse than gasoline. So, you know, I believe that there's a role, a plug-in hybrid, if we can get low-carbon liquid fuels, they are completely complementary with a plug-in hybrid. For the range extension fuel, if we can go to biofuels, or biodiesel that's zero carbon, those sorts of things, fine. The natural gas, Tebow and Pickens put in $50 million to try to persuade us to convert vehicles. They passed some legislation to pay up to $25,000 a vehicle to do some conversions. He's still trying to get that to happen. He backed off and said, oh, just for large vehicles, not for passenger vehicles. So I think, you know, in terms of the practicality, for large vehicles, if I had to choose, would I rather have a natural gas vehicle or gasoline or a diesel vehicle for a large vehicle? Absolutely, natural gas is better. But really, we want to get off fossil fuels, and natural gas doesn't do that.
Well, the point I was trying to make is that there's some people on the East Coast who are working on converting garbage into natural gas using, the garbage, and they excrete natural gas and water. So at that point, you know, it's almost like having a car that's running on based on water. It's still working on it. It's not like it's a done deal, but.
Yeah, and that point, if you factor it in, because of the natural gas going somewhere else otherwise, or going turning into methane in a landfill, you're better off. Mm-hmm. And so if we can get natural gas from that sort of way, plug it, put it into cars, that's okay?
Yeah. And the other thing is, as far as availability of electric cars, I signed up for a lease 3 months ago, and I had a car sitting right over there. So the problem is going to be the 2012. They're the ones that are affected by the tsunami. They're the ones that are still in the assuming line stage, but it's projecting that the F-13, the factory in Kentucky, will be up and operational, and at that point, at that point they'll be able to start actually stocking cars in their showrooms. So the average public can go in and test drive one. I mean, I think that's one reason why we don't do it right now, is because unless you're really an advocate, you got no idea what these things can do.
Yeah, and if you want to leave now, contact your dealer, because some people who signed up for them end up not buying them. So you can get a Leaf easier than you think. Other questions? Brad, I want to give you one of these.
Thank you.
This is a souvenir from the campaign.
Thank you.
And
One of the questions that we're dancing around that is going to be directly addressed with our next speaker. So I would rather just, Lisa, are you open to starting a few minutes early? I'd like to bring Lisa Marginelli up on the stage. Feel free to come around and engage in the discussion. Lisa said she's going to address the question that we're really all thinking about during this event, and everyone who's concerned about these kinds of vehicles and questions like emissions and energy security, and that is, can your car change the world? And are we deceiving ourselves? Are we thinking that by driving an electric vehicle, by doing something that maybe affects our own personal life and makes us feel good, maybe? But the bigger, broader question that we continually ask and that we're trying to address is affecting some real change, all up and down the spectrum of addressing that.